Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Of course, the Giant fan is disgusted today, and I totally understand it. I was expecting something like this with the Giants. I didn't expect them to win either one of their first two games, but what I wasn't expecting were the Jets to play as well as they did, and that's why more of my frustration in coming in this morning and wanting these two teams to put something together to make this a more fun football season than we've seen is the fact that the Jets should have won that game seven different ways. I mean, it took a fumbled punt return, a 60-yard field goal, and they still had an opportunity there on fourth down as they were moving down the field to get in range to kick a field goal of their own to win the game. So, I mean, the Jets outplayed the Steelers. They just made critical penalties, mistakes, and then obviously the biggest one being the fumble. It took a freaking 60-yard field goal from Chris Boswell to beat him.
And you take a look at the numbers just don't add up except for the four touchdown passes for Aaron Rodgers. And like I said, one of those touchdown passes was one of those little pop passes where it's a forward handoff behind the line of scrimmage.
Right, which, I mean, you'd love to have about 50 of those on your resume, right?
I don't think I ever had. No, I had none.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying you'd like to have a couple of those pad them stats with those things.
Oh, my God, yes.
I mean, my goodness.
I mean, something like that should be a rushing touchdown. Anything behind. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about one of these wide receiver screens that teams seem to throw a ton of nowadays.
Right.
But that's why you want the completion percentage to be around 65 to 70%. Because there are a lot of easy throws that they're making, as opposed to, the generation before me, everything was downfield. You know what I mean? There was nothing behind the line. So every now and then, a basic screen pass, as you and I would remember them to be. And I think there are a couple teams that still actually run those and run those very well. San Francisco, the Rams, do that kind of stuff pretty good. But these pop passes and these wide receiver screen things are easy completions for quarterbacks. And if you got these one, you got a guy like DK Metcalf. I couldn't believe how fast that guy is.
Yeah. I mean, and going in there, they really needed him to be a weapon or need him to be a weapon throughout the year in Pittsburgh. But it's just as well as the Jets offense played, as fun of a game as that was, you're still coming out of it, pulling your hair out, going, we should have won the game. And not only that, now I got to sit and hear Aaron Rodgers behind the podium talk about how great it was to beat everybody in the Jets organization. Like, he comes to MetLife Stadium, his first start as a Jet and blows out his Achilles, his first start as a Steelers at MetLife Stadium, he throws four touchdowns and beats us. I mean, and I know this narrative wants to be changed and everything else, and Aaron Glenn's going to change it, and they did look like a competitive football team, which is step one in this process.
Yep.
But they should have won the game. They were the better team for four quarters yesterday. And that still ultimately sucks. So I'm happy to hear that Aaron Glenn said there's no moral victories and there's some encouraging signs and hopefully the offense can continue to do this. But I mean, you got to be pissed off, especially with all the Steeler fans invading your building and dealing with that crap, and you had them on the ropes and you still let them walk out of there with a victory that they didn't earn. God. And with the Giants, it's like they didn't even feel like they had a shot to even, even been in the
same
building.
The Giants look like they've looked over the last 4 years.
Woof! All right, let's go to Derek in Massapequa. What's going on, Derek?
Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I went to the home opener yesterday for the Jets, and I just wanted to try to give you a quick little story here about what happened, basically going back to you just talking about the fans and kind of thinking about like how they can just do whatever they want, put their hands on people. But basically, I've been taking my dad to games for the past like 25 years. We've had like that bond. And then this year we decided to spend a little extra money, sit a little closer. We're paying $300, plus a seat to sit lower, end zone, like we're on the corner there, kind of near the Jets sideline. My mom wanted to come, took mom, we're having a great time. Of course, I'm surrounded by Steeler fans because there's like 50% Steeler fans in the building, which was insane yesterday. I mean, the amount of Steeler fans there was incredible. But basically, the guys behind us were just, like, nonstop. I mean, they were berating us. They were just, like, you know, yelling in our ears. Then the one guy kept just, like, grabbing my father. He's, like, a 60-something-year-old guy, you know, and they were, like, in their 30s. And, like, basically, you know, he just kept grabbing him, grabbing him, grabbing him. So then my dad turned around. He's like, just get your hands off me, dude. Like, what's your deal? You're, like, a 30-year-old guy. You're grabbing a 60-year-old guy. Like, what's the story? He goes, go get security then if you don't like it. So my dad's like, are you serious right now? Whatever. So we go get security, grab security. Security comes back. She goes, well, they're saying that you guys started it. And my dad's like, why would we go and rat ourselves out? So then I'm trying to find some way to get our seats moved. I'm trying to find guest services. I go to guest services. No one's there. Finally, I grab someone else. He takes me to someone else. They send us to some other lady in another part of guest services. She's trying to figure out, like, basically, you know, how to move our seats. Now, I mean, we're past second half. We're going into, like, the fourth already. I'm standing around for an hour. It's like, it was just such a poorly handled situation. And, like, I've seen guys get thrown out for a lot less. And I was just like, I felt like I was, like, out of place. You know, you're going into your own stadium. The Steelers fans are there, which is fine. But, like, if you're going to attack other fans and then you're going to let them sit there after they've done stuff like that, I mean, just check the tape quick and see that the guy was grabbing them and then say, hey, you guys got to go. They stay. They paid the money. Get out. You know what I mean? It was a little ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I can understand your frustration. I don't want to.
I wish for his family that the Jets would have won then.
Yeah, that would have been, that would have helped, certainly. But, I mean, going to these games, you just almost have to expect anything. So it does suck, though, that you're trying to do the right thing. You're trying to be somebody who, as if we take this fan for his word, you know, you try to do, you know, take the high road, and then you can't even do that. You know, it's like, so what do you do then? You got to take matters into your own hands and turn around and punch the guy in the face and then get thrown out for the rest of the time. It's like, it's just.
They get sued.
Yeah, get sued. It's just, it's impossible. But this is why I never want to tell anybody what to do. I know a lot of people love to go to games. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse at these events. I mean, how many fights are we going to see on social media from now until the end of the football season?
Well, I mean, we just saw 15 days of the U.S. Open and all the drama there.
No fights there?
Yeah, and then we got a Philly Karen stealing a baseball.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you got a million things going on in sports right now where people are just absolutely losing their mind. You got this Buffalo Bill fan touching the helmets of the Ravens players.
This is why I think the Ryder Cup's going to be the most disrespectful event in the history of sports.
And by the way, your boy Rory McIlroy won the Irish Open in front of his adoring fans over there in Ireland.
Ooh,
yeah. You know, how do you think that's going to go over? I was thinking that he was in front of all these fans, said all these great things about the Irish fans rooting for him and him finishing with an eagle. It was amazing. Mm. And then I was thinking the dichotomy of that fan base, the adulation they were throwing at him,
oh, yeah,
and what he was feeling like to when he comes here in a couple weeks for the Ryder Cup.
Better soak it up now, Roars. Be a different story over here at Bethpage. Different situation.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, going to these games, it's downright impossible sometimes. I mean, everybody's just a nut job. They're drunk. They think they can do whatever the hell they want. It's like,
well, and the prices just keep going through the roof. Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem. I think, you know, the tailgating, the prices. You know, you want to have a good experience. You want to be able to enjoy yourself. And unfortunately, you know, when you got 75,000 to 80,000 people, there are going to be a large sum of people that are just going to make it really uncomfortable for you.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
BT, been waiting an hour to talk about the Jets, and I started the show by saying there's good football and there's bad football. Well, the Giants played bad football. I thought the Jets played good football yesterday.
I'm very excited about the future. Listen, of course you want to win the game, and of course it stings when that 60-yarder, which could have been good from 70, that thing was drilled by Boswell. It hurts for sure, but I look at it a couple of ways here. Number one, the Jets were ready to play. They're ready to play in the first half because the stats told us that. The Jets did not punt on offense. They didn't commit a turnover. This is the first half. They didn't allow a sack. They had just two penalties, one of which was on Simpson, which was going to get Fields' back, which I have no issue with. They ran the ball 20 times, which showed me that they were going to, you know, follow through on their commitment to run. I thought their play calling was very good. They put Fields in good spots. They looked pretty poised, and they looked well-conditioned. So to me, it was emblematic of a tough, focused offseason by a rookie head coach, which to me portends good things.
Yeah, I don't even know if I could say I look at him as a rookie. He is obviously by definition a rookie head coach, but what I see is a guy who has been preparing for this opportunity far too long, and he should have probably gotten an opportunity. I don't know why he hasn't, but he should have gotten an opportunity to be a head coach many years ago. When they talk about the age, yesterday they mentioned it with Tomlin and Aaron Glenn, the same age.
Yeah.
Tomlin's been doing it for 20 years, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Aaron Glenn. Now, I wanted to hire Pete Carroll, and obviously he had success with the Raiders, so it's just a totally different philosophy. Aaron Glenn is the right guy, and I feel like you could say that definitively. It doesn't mean that the Jets are going to win a lot of games. It doesn't mean that he's going to be able to overcome the ineptitude of the owners or whatever other. Aaron Glenn is a true leader of men. When he gets up there and addresses the post-game commentary stuff, he gives you honest answers. He's not a machine that's talking in circles like Brian Daboll and won't acknowledge or answer anything. He hits stuff head on. Hey, you guys are talking about the penalties because people were getting on them for... I got into this actually last night on Sports Night with Eamon McEnany, where I was like, to me, it's not about moral victories, but I was not judging the Jets on wins and losses this year. Certainly not yet. I wanted to see a team that they could be proud of, like Aaron Glenn said. That's a team you can be proud of. The Jets competed at the highest level against the Steelers. All right, they lost a couple of plays. Fumbles on kickoffs, that happens. Like, I got news for you. Mistakes happen. Derrick Henry fumbled the game away last night.
Yeah.
Anybody want to cut him? That happens. Now, where you got to get to eventually, BT, is a spot where one mistake is not going to kill you. But they also talk about the penalty on Quincy Williams. Like, okay.
That was a dumb one.
Yeah,
Both feet are out of bounds. That was stupid. That was enough. The one penalty I couldn't say. But the procedurals, as well.
You're in real time there. Like, you're trying to make a play. You don't know where the out of bounds is. Yeah, all right, you can clean
that's
that stuff up.
That's your job to know where it is, though.
Well, I mean, but
you got to know. That was the right call. It was a bad penalty.
I'm not saying it was the wrong call. I'm saying that I'm not going to say that the Jets showed a lack of discipline because of the fumble or the Simpson penalty or even that Williams penalty.
Yep.
I think the other stuff that Glenn talked about, the false starts, all those little things being cleaned up. Justin Fields was fantastic. So I looked at a team that clearly we talked about what they were supposed to do with Aaron Glenn. What he wanted to do, they did it in week one.
They did. And if you told me that they would score 32 and give up 34, I would say I don't see that script. Not that the Jets defense is going to be amazing, because they do have a real issue at corner opposite Sauce, and even their third level, you know, Adams missed a ton of tackles. Cisco, I don't love him. Like, the Jets are a work in progress still. But, you know, the one thing that is very interesting to me about where this goes, and who knows, maybe it was just one terrific game by Justin Fields, and he kind of goes back to what maybe some of you think he's going to go back to, which I don't think, because I pointed out a few times here, you know, each year completion percentage got a little bit better. He went to a situation like Zach Wilson here and Donald here and all the other quarterbacks that died here. His destination just happened to be Chicago with no offensive imagination, no offensive line. So he's out there making mistakes, trying to be an athlete. So he has gotten better. But what is appealing to me about him is that this year is about culture and just transitioning from Loserville to expectations and accountability, all the things that we demand as fans. And it's a low-risk financial commitment to Justin Fields to see what he had. And the thing that needs to be said, I think they said it on the broadcast yesterday, Justin Fields, when he used to leave the pocket in Chicago, he would just try to, you know, make something happen and run for his life. When you see him scrambling now, his eyes are downfield trying to make a play, trying to make a throw. And that tells me that he's grown, that he's matured, that he sees the field better. I can't wait to watch him play again.
I need to see more of Justin Fields, but he was spectacular yesterday. And his first touchdown throw to Garrett Wilson had some touch on it.
Yeah.
It was thrown perfectly.
Yeah.
So he was good. But my thing, he was great yesterday. I don't know if he could continue that. And if he does, the Jets are going to win a lot of football games. My bigger thing is that they said they were going to run the football, and they did that. And they did it on the Steelers' big, bad defense. They were able to stop stop the run as well. Okay, Aaron Rodgers lit him up and threw for four touchdowns. Like you kind of expected that was going to happen. I thought Sauce did a good job, but Sauce did a good job on DK Metcalf for the most part.
I agree.
Jets were a little unlucky too. That catch at the end where DK messed it up and then it fell back into his hands.
I know.
Okay, look, guy hits a 60-yarder. What are you supposed to do? Look, the fumble on the kickoff changed the whole game as far as the win-loss thing. But if I'm not a value, you said the Jets are a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's week one of a brand new regime. So if I'm not going to evaluate their season on wins and losses, and I'm not going to do that, I have to be thrilled about everything that we saw from Aaron Glenn and his team. They went out there. They played hard. I'll give you another little thing that I loved about it. Even where maybe the play was blown dead, any loose ball that was around, the Jets were swarming to it. You know, sometimes, okay, well, was it behind the line of scrimmage? Yeah, it was, or it wasn't. It was a forward pass. But if the ball was out there or somebody puts the ball down and he wasn't touched, the Jets were around it.
Yeah.
That, to me, just shows you're in it. You're there. When you look at other games around the league yesterday, guys just don't do that. So the Jets looked to me like a well-coached, prepared team that was going to play the game hard and that's still learning here in week one. I do think that Glenn's going to clean up even some of the other stuff that we saw yesterday.
I can't say how many times I and we, by extension, have sat on our couches for almost a decade and a half. And literally, as the game's going on, if you're not asleep, right, from a food coma, you're sitting there saying, all right, there's going to be a run. All right, there's going to be a pass. Like, it was so obvious what the Jets were going to do all these years. Not an ounce of imagination from a play calling perspective. I thought they had a really good balance yesterday, but also I thought they avoided being predictable, so I think that portends good things for the new OC as well, Hangerstrand. But the other thing I would do this. Now, I almost didn't want to say this, but I'm going to say it. I would cut Gibson today.
Whoa.
I would cut him because, to me, that's, number one, he's had ball security issues in the past.
Okay, fair
enough. And if he didn't have ball security issues in the past, I'm not doing that today. But he is very expendable because, quite frankly, he's not very good at his job. And when you're not good at your job and you're sloppy/unreliable, you are expendable. And I know it's cutthroat and it's callous, and I hope that he would latch on with another team and make some money. But that is a chance. It's an opportunity. That's why they lost the game. That is an opportunity for Aaron Glenn to even accelerate the messaging in the building. There are certain things, men, that will not be tolerated. It wasn't a jarring hit with the helmet. It was a strip with the hand. You got to tuck that ball away. I would cut him today.
Yeah, I'm not going to be that drastic. Now, based on past performance, sure, that's a different issue.
Oh, he's done it before with them, Sal. Yeah, he's been a problem.
No, I get it. He said it. I never really liked him to begin with, but I wouldn't do it. And if you thought it was good enough to be on your team week one to return kicks.
Well, the kid hurt his hamstring. Yeah. Who was supposed to take his job? I mean, Gibson.
Well, where is he now?
He got hurt. Okay. Gibson, I don't know if he's, he's going to be on IR, but he was out. Yes, okay. He got hurt early in the game.
Then who's the alternative?
It's Gibson. Yeah. But you know what? If Gibson stinks, there's always another option.
I'm saying, who's the alternative to Gibson right now?
I'm forgetting his name. The kid who they brought in to take his job who hurt his hamstring early in the game. Like, Gibson was not supposed to be back there.
Right.
But
if he's not healthy, that's my point. Like, I know,
but what I'm saying is Gibson's not good, so I don't really care who it is. Now, it might not be an upgrade, Sal, but it might be like a wash. But what you're doing, yeah, if you can get better, you want to get better. But what you're telling the team is, guys, unacceptable. If you don't know the playbook, if you're not on time, if you don't work hard, if you're not a good teammate, if you can't protect the football and we can't trust you, you got to go.
I just think it's a very tricky thing because then what happens when Breece Hall fumbles?
Well, Breece Hall's better than Gibson. You look the other way.
I'm just saying
if he keeps doing it, you bench him for Braylon Allen.
Yeah, that's the point. If he keeps doing it, one mistake, it's not just like, well, okay, he made a mistake.
No.
Fumbles happen. And yes, Gibson's a different issue because he's had issues in the past, whatever. I'm just saying in general, it's not about, well, he fumbled, we're not going to tolerate that. Yeah, there are ways to do it. Whether you bench guys, sit guys, mistakes are going to happen. Fumbles happen. There's no way to completely clean that up. Same thing with penalties. Penalties are going to happen. You're going to have some late hits, unfortunately. To me, there are different type of... The penalty in the Titans-Broncos game, late in that one, where the Titans were about to get the ball back, and they made a stupid play, a late hit on the quarterback. I forget exactly what it was, but they made a stupid play. Like, there's a difference between a stupid late hit and what happened with Quincy Williams yesterday. I think that was just he made a mistake. He made a bad play. He's got to clean it up. That wasn't a stupid penalty where we've seen the Jets make so many
selfish penalties.
Yeah.
But now, I would differentiate and say that it was still a stupid penalty, but not born out of being selfish. It was born out of being aggressive, which I can live more. The only reason I say that, Sal, is, you know, you have to know the boundaries. It's like if you're a base runner in baseball, you can't run outside the line. You got to have spatial awareness. And I know that things are moving fast and bodies and 80,000 people, 46,000 of which were Steeler fans, of course. Things are flying fast. I get it. But when 2 feet, not one, when 2 feet are 2.5 feet into the white boundary, to me, that's a dumb penalty.
What I will say definitively about Glenn, we'll get back to your calls here, 888-808-1019. If they don't eventually have success, it's not going to be because of him. Yep. It will be because they will not have the proper guy putting the right talent around him. I think Aaron Glenn is a home run head coach. You hear it every time the guy speaks. That was the case from the beginning. And then you got to see it right out of the gate in week one, the way his team played. I'm not into moral victories.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about big picture, where the Jets have been coming from with the ineptitude,
yep,
like the highest levels of ineptitude, to one game with the new head coach, I think you have to be. If you're a Jet fan, you're doing yourself a disservice if you're not happy with the way that they looked in week one.
I'm pumped. I really am. I do think they've got the right guy now because Aaron Rodgers threw 4 touchdowns. Like, that Rodgers stuff's going to seep into the mindset, of course. Even though, you know, Aaron's got to say it's not about more victories, and he's absolutely right. But there's got to be a transition from being awful to being competitive, which the Jets were highly competitive. So I'm not going to grade them out and say it's a failed week because they didn't win the game. But did it have to be Aaron Rodgers? Like, that is the one thing, even from a Jets perspective. Like, come on, man, it's Rodgers. No picks, 4 touchdowns. Come on.
You knew that was coming, though. Ray is in Babylon. What's up, Ray?
I'm not happy, but I'm pleased. The Jets put on some performance last night. One thing, gentlemen, that you didn't mention was that the offensive line gave up 0 sacks. Think about that.
Yeah.
I'm high on this offensive line. There was 0 sacks. They allowed Fields to pass for 218 yards. Breece Hall was a force yesterday. If we didn't have, you know, that stupid Gibson, you know, hit the bricks, get out of here fumble, that was converted into a touchdown, I hate to say this, we could have, should have. I don't want to sound that way.
Dang.
And I really am a Beningo negative Jet fan. I can't be negative this morning.
Yeah.
I'm going to quote Aaron Glenn. It's not a moral victory, but for the love of God, Maron Namir, there is something to build on.
Attaboy, Ray. I love it. See, that's the sound. That's what I'm talking about right there. Ray, thanks for the call. Now, listen, this isn't even really a nitpick, but it does need to be said. But he's going to figure this out. You can't have one timeout with a minute to go. Like, those, the good teams and the veteran coaches and the coaches who elevate and eventually.
Well, they blew one on that 2-point attempt. That one you can't have.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Come on. Like, so you get the ball with 1:03 left.
And then the play call I thought was bad as well.
On the 2-point, the one he threw the fade in the back. Yeah, I hated
that.
Come
on, dude. You can't do that.
I hated that play. I'm happy you say that. Yeah. That's not on Aaron Glenn. That's on Hangerstram. But to me, like, the margin for success on a fade to the right part of the end zone with a smallish wide receiver, it's not Megatron or Altoon. I'm on the same page with that. But I got to say one thing, too, because it speaks to something that doesn't just happen in week one. It happens when Glenn first walked in the building that is going to really be good for this team fast moving forward. They give up 14 points in 50 seconds, as we know. And at that point, I'm sitting there saying, all right, this thing just got very wobbly, very fast. And they go from winning big to losing 31-26. What happens after the 14th point and 50th second elapses? The Jets go Hall, Reynolds, Hall, Taylor, Fields, Hall, Fields, penalty, touchdown. So they punched right back. And, you know, that would have been a good time for a team that didn't have any mental toughness or spirit to check out. Eh, we played a good first half. Eh, Steelers got a lot of Hall of Famers. Eh, they got 50,000 fans in here. Let us tap out. We played a good half. They fought back, and they scored again after what was a very tough situation. So they're 0-1, but, boy, it doesn't feel like they're 0-1. It's crazy.
Defense, and obviously they have a lot of points defensively, a lot. They allowed a lot of points defensively in Rodgers with the 4 touchdowns. But still, even with that, remember I talked about with the Giants, I wanted to see if they were going to look dominant at times. Never really got that feel. But with the Jets, whether it was Quinnen Williams, whether it was Will McDonald.
Will looked good.
You got to see a defense with some potential there.
That's
in
right.
Week one that can be. Again, I know they allowed a lot of the points. Stopped the run with the Steelers.
They did. And the knock on Will, he was always like a wiggle and burst guy, but he won a couple of matchups because he, like, weight room, like you could tell he put the time in.
not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I thought Aaron Glenn's post-game press conference was excellent. I think he's very honest, and I think that, look, when you lose, we're all going to be annoyed. We're all going to be frustrated. So there isn't anything perfect that you can say after a game, but what you want is honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Here is just a little clip of something Aaron Glenn said, and in my opinion, what he has to do about it.
You will not be on the field with this team if you're going to cause us to lose games. You're going to cause issues like that. So we will get that addressed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's address this thing, Coach, before we get to the angry Giant fan calls. John Simpson committed a penalty. You're not going to cut him. He's one of your more reliable offensive linemen.
Yes, and they played well, especially in the run game.
1,000%. Quincy Williams had a really bad penalty in this game, but then he made up for it mm-hmm. with a sack late against Aaron Rodgers, which in the moment you thought this could seal the victory. Xavier Gibson does nothing for this team other than kick and punt returns, and he put the ball in the ground in the worst possible spot. He has not developed into a wide receiver. So why is he here? So Aaron Glenn, I'm asking you, if you're going to back up your words, mm-hmm. those tough words of if you're going to hurt us or not help us win, you ain't going to be here, then I expect Xavier Gibson to be cut today. And I don't mean to be so mean towards Xavier.
It's very callous.
Or callous to his family. But if Aaron Glenn is going to back up his words, explain to me how Xavier Gibson is still on the New York Jets.
Well,
you tell me.
I thought you were actually asking Aaron Glenn to answer you, even though he's not on a mic anywhere.
I was expecting you to answer it for him.
So I will mime Aaron Glenn. Xavier Gibson is a very talented athlete, a very talented player for us, and he is going to be a contributor for us as the season goes on. He made a mistake, and it will not happen again. That's how he's going to answer it.
Well,
if he was asked that question.
It's the wrong answer.
But that's how he's going to answer
okay.
it.
Okay, but if you're going to talk...
He doesn't have a history with Xavier Gibson yet.
No, but we do. He's been here for 2 years, and he's useless.
Yeah,
and he just committed a fumble that basically cost him the game.
But good or bad, he has a clean slate with Aaron Glenn. Well, actually, it's not a clean slate.
Yeah.
It's soiled right now, but you know what I mean?
It's a very dirty slate
it's
now.
It's very dirty after week one, but that's the first... X on the slate. So
no pun intended, since his name is Xavier.
Exactly.
All I will say about this is if you're going to have tough words, you better back it up. And to me, those words would mean Xavier Gibson gets caught for what happened yesterday at MetLife Stadium. Now let's get to your calls. 888-808-1019, the toll-free number. Andrew is in Shirley. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Hey, guys. Best show on the fan. Thanks for having me.
What's up, dude?
Appreciate it. What's up?
I'm obviously livid, so I don't even know what to think as a Giants fan. And I feel like anybody who's looking at this today or even right after the game of calling for Russell Wilson to be benched or look how bad Russell Wilson played and all this stuff and he looks scared. It feels like you can only have that response if you started watching the Giants this year, because it's a rinse repeat of every single year of a myriad of different quarterbacks, obviously highlighted by Daniel Jones. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he's on another team, all of a sudden you don't see that anymore. I know we have to wait for another few weeks, but it's so not shocking to me because I love the guy, but apparently shocking to everyone else. I don't want to start dark because I'm going to watch the same thing and then the kid's going to get broken. But I have a question for Tiki specifically. What goes into the preparation of week one specifically that the Giants keep falling short of every single year, especially on offense? I would say heavily on offense. But it's just so unprepared from a week one aspect every single year. It's just like I can't wrap my brain around it, different.
Well, Andrew, the simple answer is the inconsistency with the offensive line, because that has been the one constant. And we've talked about it ad nauseum, but it really isn't just that.
if you go back three seasons ago, in 2022, their opening game was great, right? They found a way to win it, went for two, you know, got that first victory out of the way for Dabes and this new organization and staff, and it was a catalyst for that season. But I think in the subsequent years, it's been one of two things: bad luck and just the other team being significantly more talented, depth-wise, skill-wise, coaching, everything. But that, I don't think that was the case today or yesterday. I don't think that was the case with the Commanders. Yes, the O-line was inconsistent, but it also felt like so conservative, and you said boring, and I guess that's the word that a lay fan can use, but it was the same. It felt like the same thing over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah,
it was like, where is the innovation? Where is the schematic advantage that a lot of offenses have in the NFL these days? You don't see it. I see duo runs. Like, what's a duo? People don't know what a duo is. Duo is basically double team blocks at the point of attack towards the tight end. It's what we used to call power. But when we did it, you pull a fullback in there, you'd put a tight end in there, and you're running power, you're running damn power. You're pulling the guard, and you're getting 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And maybe if your running back is good enough, he's going to stick his foot in the ground if they over-pursue and go, cut out the back door and go for 20 yards. That 95-yard touchdown I had against the Oakland Raiders, that was power, right? Duo is power without the power. And so the Giants just run duo. It's just downhill, get smashed, penetration. There's no movement because it's just two guys on one. You don't get movement at the point of attack. There is nowhere for the running back to go. Nowhere. And then you see other teams like the Jets. They run inside zone. They run sweeps. They run zone reads. I watched Saquon Barkley's first read. It was his first 16-yard run. It was one of the most unbelievably great design plays I've ever seen.
Mm.
It was a pitch out the back door, but the offensive lineman ran it like a screen.
Right.
So it was unbelievable. He had like two lead blockers 4 yards downfield. And it was, you let the defensive end go, and it was just like, man, that's not hard.
No, I get you.
And so I'm getting frustrated by watching mediocrity in play design, because you're not winning in the NFL if you don't do that. Right? There are two ways to have success. And I guess both sides of the ball, but since we're talking offense, you can scheme your way to success, or you just have superior athletes, quarterbacks, wide receivers, etc. Think about Lamar Jackson or Derrick Henry running downhill, or Josh Allen, to be perfect. He's just superior, right? So the scheme matters, but really he's going to make a play.
Do you hear that sound? You guys hear that?
Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock.
Tiki's a time bomb.
Hmm.
He is ready to unleash on this coaching staff.
I'm just getting frustrated by watching this. Like, the running backs don't have a chance. I love running backs. I love Tyrone Tracy.
Oh, sure. He had no chance yesterday.
Love him. Cam Scataboo, I think, is going to be amazing.
No shot yesterday.
Throw him out as a wide receiver. Just chuck him the ball. Get 6 yards. Run through two defenders. Almost three. It's just amazing. Blitz pick up on one of those downs early. Stoned the linebacker or the blitzing defender.
That was the highlight of the game.
I mean,
Cam Scataboo picking up the blitz.
Right.
So was the highlight of the game.
So reward the dude with a play that gives him a chance.
Yeah.
Like, it's just. And I get it. They didn't run a ton of plays. And so you really can't get that deep into your playbook. But, man, it is so frustrating when there isn't something you stand for.
To answer our caller's point about week one and it always being ugly, here are your last three week one final scores. 40-0, 28-6, and 21-6. They have now gone three consecutive week ones under Brian Daboll. They've scored a combined 12 points in those three games.
Mm-hmm.
0 times have they gotten in the end zone. That's just where we are right now.
Yeah.
And that's how the seasons have now started the last couple of years.
Right. It puts so much pressure on week two. Even if it's not a must win in week two, you can't look inept.
WFAN NFL football is powered by Verizon. Let's go to Angel in Brooklyn. What's up, Angel?
Hey, guys. I have a Giants thing, and I also have a Jets comment at the end.
Go ahead. Sure.
With the Giants play and the way Daniel Jones played against the Colts, is it more of a coaching issue than a quarterback issue?
Mm.
Also, with Russell Wilson being in other teams and averaging over 200 yards with every other team except, you know, what happened
at that game, or that's one thing I wanted to talk about with the Giants.
We'll get to your other one, and I'll answer this one, because I have an answer for you.
Okay, sure, sure.
Well, he said get to the other one, and then he'll answer yes. your point. Do you have another point?
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Yeah. Right. I thought the Giants would do better with a better QB, but it wasn't the case. As a matter of fact, I thought it would be the opposite. I thought the Giants would do better, and the Colts would do worse with Jones, okay. but that did not turn out the way it was.
All right.
And my Jets comment was that I think we have to see what they do against Buffalo in week two. I think that would be
but Angel, right. It all goes back to your first point. And as much as I am optimistic about the Jet offense after week one, mm-hmm. it is 1 week.
Yeah.
And I've learned that lesson the hard way and the easy way before. So I think before you give the answer on Daniel Jones and even Russell Wilson, we do have to remind ourselves, as disgusted as a Giant fan is today, and you have every right to be, it is 1 week. Like, the declarative statement can't be Daniel Jones is about to become a star again, right. and Russell Wilson is completely washed. It's 1 week in the NFL, why I'm annoyed about the Jet loss, because I can't assume that the same thing's going to happen
week two
against Buffalo.
Yeah.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.